What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Celtics Talk Podcast here on the NBC Sports Boston Podcast Network. And back in the co-pilot chair, I don't know if he has any Patino pasta today, but John Tomasi is with us. What's going on?
Once Tom Brady won the Super Bowl, I said, you know what? It's time to eat the Patino pasta. So we celebrate. No, I did not eat the Patino pasta. It's under my desk somewhere.
We're going to get into some Brady because it's the biggest story in Boston and it has some overlaps because remember, Tom Brady was out there helping recruit Kevin Durant back in the day. But I want to start on the Celtics, who an underwhelming West Coast trip so far, 2-2. They'll finish up on Tuesday night in Utah against one of the hottest teams in the league. You know, maybe that will swing how we look back at this trip. But I want to break out the panic meters at first because that's what we do around here. John Tomasi, Kemba Walker has not looked great, especially not against Phoenix on Sunday, struggling 4-for-20 from the field, really got swallowed up around the basket. On a scale of 1 to 10, I sort of joke, if we had a graphic, it would be like little stem cell injection needles. 1 to 10, how concerned are you about Kemba Walker?
Yeah, I'm like an 8 PRP needles or whatever they're called. Definitely concerned. And it's not even like how he's played, because you would say, all right, he's coming back from an injury. You understand that it maybe won't happen right away for him, but this is the bigger picture thing. And I will go to my regular beat to make a comparison that Celtics fans are not going to like, but I wonder if there's a little bit of Dustin Pedroia there with Kemba Walker in terms of undersized guy who has overachieved throughout his career, been an all-star level performer. But at some point you wonder, all right, when does it catch up with him? You know, like guys that size don't tend to have the longest careers. Isaiah Thomas, near and dear to all of our hearts, is probably the most extreme example. But you look at a degenerative kind of injury, which is exactly what Pedroia had, which is by all accounts what Kemba has with his knee. And you just say, you can sit here and hope that it's going to get better. But I think if you're the realist in you says, this is something we know he's going to have to deal with forever. It's only going to get worse as he gets older. And when you're Kemba Walker's size, you can't, there's nothing to fall back on. You have to be quick. Like you mentioned, he's getting swallowed up at the rim. Just go back and watch his 2018-2019 highlights with the Hornets before he came here, especially when he played against Kyrie Irving. And this is somebody who just abused people off the dribble and then finished at the rim. You're not seeing that now. You're seeing that sort of sad side of Kemba goes to the hoop, gets swallowed up, ball barely gets up to rim, and then he throws his arms up because he wants a foul that just wasn't there. It's hard to watch. I'm an 8. How do you feel? Am I overstating this?
No. I wrote something today, and I put it at a 6. But, you know, like in the moment, I'm probably an 8. And then I sit back and say, well, you know, when Tatum's out there, when Brown's out there, when Marcus Smart is out there, maybe the spacing's a little bit better. Maybe there's less attention paid to him. I think at some point calls probably have to start tipping his way a little bit more. All that being said, yeah, I'm left wondering, like, you know, this is the first time we've seen Kemba really frustrated. Okay, so is he frustrated because the shots aren't falling? Is he frustrated because he's not getting the calls? Or is he frustrated because his body's not allowing him to do what he once did? And I think it's fair that I don't know if we know the answer to that yet. Second half against the Clippers the other night, he looked phenomenal. And I said, oh, okay, maybe he's turning a little bit of a corner here. Broken play, pull up. It ends up being pretty much the game winner as they beat the Clippers. And look, both sides were shorthanded, whatever. That's still a good win. You feel really good. And you're like, all right, you know, maybe this team is trending in the right direction. Then they go out there against Phoenix and Kemba doesn't have it. They fall into old traps with how bad their defense was late. And so, yeah, the meter is up right now. It's definitely over the halfway point for me. You know, this is 9 games in. I think I said on postgame, I was like, you know, it's still only 6-7 games in. And then I looked at the numbers. I was like, no, this is 9 games, 260 something minutes. Like he should be better by now. And just like you laid out, it's to me, I looked at the numbers, his shooting percentages by range, his finishing at the rim isn't awful, but between 3 and 10 feet, which is where he's pretty much putting up those floaters or whatever, when he's not getting to the rim, it just 18% shooting. And it's abysmal. Yeah, you just can't get by like that. Jeff Teague might be shooting better, and that's totally incriminating at that point. So I don't know. I want to see it fall. I want to see when he's got everybody out there, if that makes it easier. But when you juxtapose it, even just last year, the start of the year, Kemba, versus what it is now, it's scary in a way because it's just not the same level. To Brad Stevens' credit, and I don't know if he's just downplaying it, he's like, well, you know, that Clippers game and the Golden State gave me hope, but that clunker against the Lakers and then that Phoenix game just leaves me a little bit leery.
Yeah, more than a little bit. And, you know, you say when everybody comes back, maybe the spacing is better. It's like, did the spacing matter when he was an all-star on a terrible team in Charlotte? He was their entire offense, and teams still couldn't stop him. Now it's like, oh, you know, he needs some more catch-and-shoot opportunities. He needs better spacing when he drives. It's like, that shouldn't matter for a player of his caliber. And the bigger picture issue for the Celtics is, you need him to be that third all-star. This isn't the kind of thing you can say, well, you know, maybe Peyton Pritchard's better. No, if Peyton Pritchard is better than Kemba Walker, then you are going nowhere. And that's nothing against fast PP. It's nothing against him, but it's just reality, you know? And so you need to see more out of Kemba. And I don't know physically if it's there. That's what I just come back to. Physically, is he able to do it? You don't question the heart. You don't question, you know, the killer instinct, all of that stuff. But if physically he can't beat guys off the dribble, or he can't finish as well at the rim, or like you watch old Kemba, he played with like a bounce. Everything was a bounce, you know, catch, bounce, shoot in your face. If a big guy switches on you, you know, he's taking that, stepping into that three and nailing it. And you just don't see that kind of bounce, that kind of energy from him right now.
I'm totally stealing that on our pregame show tomorrow, because you're right. Yeah. Like, it's just not, it's like he doesn't have the smile. Like, for the first time, this is the first time I've seen him really so frustrated that it looks pained out there. Whereas, you know, he'll have bad shooting nights. He'll just smile through the whole thing. I think the frustration is mounting with him. Again, I need to figure out if that's a physical thing or if that's just one of these slumps or whatever. Is he mad about the minute restriction and not being able to find rhythm? Either way, he's got to crank it up a notch.
Can I jump in real quick? Yeah. So my Pedroia comparison, I covered him after, you know, he tore his thumb ligament on opening day in 2013, played the rest of the season, won a World Series. Then the injuries really started piling up. And you saw the exact same thing. Pedroia was the little bleep talker, like all of that stuff that you hear about him. It was all true. But those last 3 or 4 years, even before he was only playing 2 games a year, when he was playing really injured and he knew that his body wasn't letting him be the player that he wanted to be, you saw the persona change, and you're seeing a little of that from Kemba. That's why I hesitate to make that comparison, because it's so dire, but that's what I'm reminded of just watching him from a body language perspective and certainly a production perspective.
Well, now after this conversation, I'm at 11 and a half on the panic meter. So thank you, John DeMonte, for sending that meter straight through the roof. Stepping back, bigger picture, Celtics as a whole, on a scale of 1 to 10, Danny Ainge burritos at Chipotle, how bullish are you on this team as a whole?
Yes, like a 4. I mean, like, I think they'll be entertaining, and I think they will, you know, be hopefully a top 4 seed in the East. I think probably they'll finish 4th, something like that. But you just look, this has the feel to me of more of an intermediate team. Okay, this is the year that we discovered it is 100%, not only is it Tatum and Brown's team, but both of them are up to the task of being those two superstar players that you build around. It doesn't necessarily happen for you in year one. I guess the only thing that will change this calculus on my part, which I know we're going to get to, is what happens with the trade exception, because clearly the team needs help, and more help than just, you know, Smart comes back and Kemba maybe rounds back into form. They're missing pieces right now. So I guess I withhold, you know, final judgment. We'll see what Ainge does with the exception. But as they're constructed right now, it just feels like, all right, this is more of a building year. And I know that's weird to say when they've been to the Eastern Conference title game 3 times recently, but this is the first year of the two Jays, this really being their team, and we see where that's headed. And big picture, that's headed, I think, in the absolute right direction. But in the short term, I don't know that this is going to be the year.
Yeah, it's fair. There's games where we'll get done, and I say, you know, is this an average team? Like 12 and 10? Like, for all the talent they've got, for having two young stars, why isn't it turning into wins more often? And I think part of it was they just won a lot of close games at the start of the year, and maybe we sort of lulled ourselves into what this team could be. And I agree. I think they need some upgrades. I mean, health will help. You know, not having Smart and Brown yesterday, like that swings that game, but they should still be good enough to win against the Phoenix Suns. Like, you know, Tatum, if he's the top 10 guy that we think he is, should be able to dominate that game. And for stretches of the first half, he wasn't able to. So again, I'm not overly concerned. I'd say my confidence meter in the team is still probably a little bit higher. Like, I think if I came into the year, I said the only thing that matters in the first probably 30 games was Tatum and Brown taking another step. And that's happened. But now you got to fill out the rest. Like, okay, you know, Kemba to me doesn't have to be great, but he does have to be super effective and he has to make those guys better. And that hasn't happened yet. We'll get to that traded player exception. I think that could swing everything. I'm wondering what this bench will look like. So I'm still probably like a seven. But yeah, I think I need to see a little bit more crispness, and we'll get into sort of the specifics here. 'Cause we're going to play a game now, fill in the blank game. We love these on early edition and BST. So I figured I'd co-opt it for the podcast. Brad Stevens back in the sort of like, you know, whenever the Celtics struggle, I love when Celtics fans get all uppity about Brad Stevens. I actually asked producer John Henry, can we get like coach of the year odds? 'Cause I just wanted to see where Brad had gone yet, but we're not going to go there. What the one thing that Brad Stevens does that really grinds my gear right now is blank.
So for me, I'm not really down on Stevens right now. I guess in the bigger picture, this is not a quippy, soundbitey answer. I'm sorry. I don't like end of game performance for them. Like, this has become a recurring thing. You certainly go back to last year's playoffs, Toronto, certainly Miami. And now this year you're seeing a lot of it too, where leads late in games evaporate or close games become 5-point losses. You know, the San Antonio game was winnable. They didn't win it. Certainly the Kings game, winnable. They didn't win it. And you just see a lot, Phoenix, same thing. You just see a lot of these sort of fourth quarter breakdowns. And I don't know if you can really put that on the coach necessarily, but you got to put it on someone. So if I'm looking at Brad Stevens, I just say, I'm not sure what he's doing late in games. I'm not really going to rip his rotations because this is an imperfect roster right now. Like, Kemba's playing 30 plus minutes a night. He probably shouldn't be, but where do you turn? Smart is injured right now. Then you look at some of the bench guys. I know Grant Williams is shooting pretty well, but there's a lot of tweener guys, him, Shemi, where you just say they need upgrades. You know, certainly Jeff Teague, they could use an upgrade there. So this is a long-winded way of saying I don't really have any big problems with Brad Stevens right now.
So you said you wouldn't quibble with rotation. I don't either. Like, I understand he has to play these two big and crazy three big lineups because their healthiest position right now is the five. And you want to play more Robert Williams, at least get him some time out there, at least more than you want to have to lean on Jeff Teague. So I get why he's going big in instances. My one complaint, and this is something that, you know, I think we've harped on Brad for throughout his Celtic tenure, is he's always straddling this balance between trying to win games and playing for seeding, and it comes at the expense of player development. And so, like, I can't tell you unequivocally that Aaron Nesmith will be a positive if he's out there. But there's only one way to know, and that's to put him in there and let him sink or swim. And so I get a little bit frustrated when I see he got an opportunity. He started to make some strides. If nothing else, he's making shots. I know the defense wasn't great, but I felt like they were trending in the right direction. And then all of a sudden, I think it was the Lakers game, you know, plays the first 5 minutes, and now he's disappeared since. And this is at a point when you don't have Jaylen Brown for the last two games. You're not, like, replete with wing depth to begin with. And he still can't get an opportunity. So, you know, like, the running joke among my friends are like, you know, is he that bad? Like, does Brad just not trust him? Like, what's going on for him not to be out there? And so I get it. Brad's got pretty firm. Like, you got to earn that time. And even a guy like Carson Edwards now had to prove it. And he's getting a little bit more of an opportunity. You shouldn't just be thrown out there just to be thrown out there, right? But I think when you're a first round pick and the potential is there, I just don't want to get to a place where, almost like Robert Williams, and some of that is health related, 3 years in, we're like, well, what is he? Is he a future center? Is he a rotation presence? Is he a guy who's just, you know, fun and small burst? Like, you know, I'm bullish on him, but, like, yeah. I need to see more from Nesmith. And so, you know, that's where I want to go. And now I'm going to steal your answer, because one of my other fill in the blanks is the Celtics have lost 7 of their last 10. You know, what is the most frustrating thing, or what it needs to change? And you nailed it. Late game defense has been so bad. And Brad Stevens' calling card throughout his career has been defensive DNA, defensive identity, teams that have been able to dig in. And even when they can't get consistent offense, force the other team into stops. Watching some of these games, besides that Clippers game when Shemi Ojeleye of all people went out and locked up Kawhi, I don't feel like they're getting any stops late in games. Like, their defensive rating is 125. I think they're 25th in the NBA in fourth quarter defensive rating, even as their overall defensive rating has crawled into the top 10. They've got to be better. And I do think some of that falls back on the coach. Like, you know, why has it consistently been an issue? They're 2-6 in their last 8 crunch time games. They're playing a ton of crunch time games, which is within 5 points in the last 5 minutes. They need to get better there. And all the things we've laid out, health will help, maybe additions will help. But to me, the biggest issue right now is the defensive end. Like, we can lament Kemba's offense all we want. Their offense is going to be fine. They're going to score points. They need to figure out how to be a good defensive team.
Yeah, and the part that really makes you scratch your head is when you look at some of the rotation players now, like Grant Williams. I know he's making threes, but he's probably not on the floor because of his offense. Ogilvy is not on the floor because of his offense. He's on the floor because he's a tank, and he can hopefully lock guys down, like you said, with Kawhi. And when those guys aren't giving it to you, you know, Tice is another one where I feel like he's been a pretty good for an undersized rim protector. When they're going well defensively, he's often right in the middle of it. And so you look at Tatum, we know is a good defender. Brown, when he's healthy, Smart, these are all good defenders. And so you say, why are they playing below the sum of their parts on that end of the floor, especially late in games? And I can't figure out, because like you said, the defense being their hallmark, but it's also effort. Like, effort has been a hallmark for this team. And for whatever reason, it hasn't looked the same late in games. Like, there'll be spurts, you know, Scal will point them out on the broadcast. You say, this is Celtics basketball. You see guys scrambling. You see guys helping each other on defense. You see guys closing out on shooters. And you're not seeing that as consistently as we're used to. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah, effort is 100% at the root of it, I think. And it's like, just knowing when to be in the right spots. It seems like there's too many times where they're like looking at each other like, oh, why weren't you there? And I get it. Chemistry, continuity, that'll come. Like, sometimes you see Tristan Thompson do that, but it just happens way too often for this team. And when the core has been the same, you know, you just expect more. I sort of took that answer. Is there anything else? Do you have another biggest issue right now, or is it definitely that defense?
No, I mean, that's it for me. But even late game offense too, I feel, can be inconsistent, where we saw it in the playoffs last year. It got very frustrating where they were blowing the leads against Miami, where their late game offense, there's no ball movement and it just stagnates. Like, everything stagnates. And I think there's been a lot of that. And I was thinking back, certainly the Isaiah Celtics, King of the Fourth, you know, they won a lot of games that they had no business winning, because they were so unselfish. The one game where they beat Cleveland in the conference finals when everybody was hurt, and Avery Bradley hit the jumper at the buzzer, and like, they were going back door, and it was just like, this is fun basketball, even though the talent disparity is gigantic between these two teams. And then you go to the Kyrie year where he was hurt, and they had different guys hitting buzzer beaters like every four games. And it was just like, that team played free, and those teams did. And these teams play a little tight at the end of games. And maybe that's part of Tatum and Brown being young and having to learn that skill as well as everything else that they're taking on. But, you know, I just feel like early in Stevens' tenure, and maybe it's because they were such underdogs, they played with nothing to lose, and now they seem very tight.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They got to find that. I mean, I hate to call it a joy, but like just go out there and play. Like, I feel like their talent needs to take over more often. You know, there's something I've said with Time Lord all the time. It's like, when they don't overthink things, they play really well. And maybe they're just, you know, in their own heads based on some of their struggles. That could be from Kemba to, you know, all the way down the line.
And just one other thing on that, real quick.
Oh, I love it. I love when you go for it.
One other thing. So you're talking about, like, I don't want to be this guy who's like reading everything into body language, because that can be annoying. But you watch the Sacramento game and you see De'Aaron Fox like joking with Tatum and smiling. And it's just like, oh yeah, like, our guys don't do that as much. Like, Jaylen Brown, I mean, he's got that like murderer stare locked in from the opening tip. And that's good. That's LeBron-like. I like that. But at the same time, is he like, you know, a smile here and there wouldn't be so bad. You don't see a lot of that out of the Celtics. Kemba's the guy who's supposed to bring that kind of energy, but he's fighting so many other things right now, as we discussed, that it's not there from him either. So there is a little bit of a sort of joylessness, like clenched fists, clenched jaw kind of vibe to them right now that you would like to see them be able to break out of and play the game with more joy, because that's when they're at their best. And it is a great game to watch. It's a beautiful game. And so they need to embrace that more.
It's funny you say that, because then in my mind immediately races to that 2017-18 disaster. And this, it's not a parallel with this team, but, you know, there was frustration there that there were such high expectations and they were just so they just could never reach it. And I think, you know, part of that is this year, like, fair or not, every time we bring up this team, we say, been to the Eastern Conference Finals three of the past 4 years, haven't been able to get over that hump. And so I wonder if that weighs on them a little bit. And, you know, they probably need to find more of that joy in the moment than necessarily think like, all right, how do we get to, you know, how do we make that next step? Because you can't get yourself to the Eastern, into the NBA Finals in March and February. You need to just be building in the right direction. I'm sure Brad Stevens stresses that. But yeah, they need to just find the joy in the fact that they have some really good players. They, you know, the strides that they've made, I'll be interested to see. That's something I'm going to keep an eye on now. That's another call I might.
And there's one other thing too, and this drives me crazy. And this would be a rant for another day, but while I've watching a lot of the Hornets highlights, Gordon Hayward looks completely reinvigorated playing with a 19-year-old LaMelo Ball, and they have great chemistry. And that team, you know, they're probably going to be eighth seed at best, but still, they're already playing above the sum of their parts. And you can see that he looks completely different when you watch him on the floor. And it's like, why couldn't that guy have been here? And I don't put that on him. I put that on everybody else. You know, when you hear the stuff about, I know Chris Gasper said this on Felger and Maz, you know, oh, the players referred to Gordon when he was coming back as Brad's son, which is total, I would swear if I could, but it's a PG crowd, that's BS. Like, the guy was coming back from a broken leg, and the coach is trying to reintegrate him into the lineup, and you're like, oh, this guy's playing again. Like, no wonder he wanted to leave. I don't put that on him. I put that on whatever the culture was. And so, you know, I think that's an indictment of what they have going on a little bit over there right now, that he looks so energized playing with another young roster. It's not like he went to a veteran roster. All those guys, you know, Terry Rozier's a veteran on that team. And what's he like, 25? So, I mean, so I look at that and I just say that's an indictment of how, you know, of how the Celtics play a little bit and how they I don't want to overstate this, but I just think it's a little bit of an indictment on the culture that they had there.
I love it. Like, act surprised when you see Forsberg Colin, Celtics searching for joy later this week on NBCSportsBoston.com, because like, I think that's perfect. And again, I think it goes back to the Hornets are playing with not house money, but they're playing like, hey, we're good. We're going to make the playoffs this year. We might be the ninth or the eighth seed, but Hayward's happy. He's making a bundle of money. He's playing. He might be an all-star, and there's less pressure now. Like, Gordon Hayward's entire time in Boston was defined by this expectation to be the all-star player that they recruited. And the situation never allowed him to be that. And I agree, that whole thing about, like, you know, pandering. Brad Stevens looked at his roster and said, we need Gordon Hayward to be great to reach our goals, and was trying to get it out of him, and eventually had to like relent and move him to the bench just because it wasn't work. I mean, but that is a whole nother episode to go down that road. Our friends over at PointsBet have updated their odds for the Eastern Conference winner. Right now, the Nets are up top at plus 125. The Bucks are at plus 300. 76ers plus 450. And then the Boston Celtics at plus 800. So we're going to do a little fill in the blank action too. My question was, you know, the Celtics have to do blank to elevate into that upper stratosphere. Take this where you like. Is it the traded player exception? Is it finding that joy together? What do the Celtics have to do to get into that mix with the Nets and the Bucks and the Sixers?
Yeah, I would say, and I'm fascinated to hear your response to this as it relates to the TPE. So my thing is, they need to get someone. I am not interested in a center. I am not interested in JJ Redick. Like, I mean, 36 years old. If you were so close that the only thing you needed was a spot shooter or spot up shooter, then yes, JJ Redick. But we've talked about the defensive struggles. That's never been a great part of his game. I'm not sure he's going to find that at age 36 in his 15th or 16th year in the NBA. I want another wing player. And so for me, Harrison Barnes is the name that sort of makes the most sense, because, you know, he's available, or he should be available. The right. Kings are sort of falling in the West, and he would fit here for more than a year. I want somebody who can come in and be a part of this moving forward. That's part of the value of that. It's not that you get a one-time shot at turning a four seed into a three seed. It's, do you have somebody that you can add who can help beyond this year? So Barnes fits for me. My question for you, I'm going to turn this around. I'm hosting this podcast now.
Nice, here we go.
My question for you is, do you think it's better use of that exception to split it up, or to just go big for one guy? I'm sort of the go big for one. Barnes is the name just that everyone knows is available. But anyway, I'm curious. Did you go one, or do you split it up?
I go one if it's someone the caliber of Barnes. You know, I think there's guys you could overpay for that use the majority of it that I'd be like, I don't know if that's the best use. Let's put it this way. Like, you know, they could go get a Vucevic from Orlando, but you're probably not only going to use up the entirety of that exception, you're going to have to send out a bunch of salary because of the way they're hard capped this year after signing Tristan Thompson. You're going to probably have to send out 3 first-round picks to make Orlando do that deal. And I don't know if it's enough of an upgrade at the center position where I'm like, oh, this guy is so decidedly better than what Daniel Tice is giving you that I like this deal. And so, you know, I want to go big, but it has to be the right guy. Barnes sort of is in the sweet spot for everything. He plays the four, you know, gives you that wing depth. He's obviously having probably the most efficient shooting year of his career. The money is a little bit big, $22 million a year. You're going to have to send out somebody, you know, Romeo, Nesmith, and picks or pick, whatever it might be. It's going to still cost you, but you're just like you said, he fits perfectly because he's already been the fourth option on a championship team in Golden State, and he's going to embrace that in Boston. I think at this point of his career, he had the chance to be the focal point down in Dallas and then with Sacramento. And it was like, you know, he did his thing, but, you know, probably everyone started to look at him and say, oh, he's not worth that money. He is worth that money if he can be a superstar in his role. And we saw in that Kings game, he was fantastic in terms of setting other guys up. And I just think he's perfect. And so it does come down to, do the Kings have been to the playoffs since 2006? Are they willing to move on? Other names. So like, Aaron Gordon, guy who's injured right now, $18 million a year, also for 3 years under contract, descending value. I like that at the right price. I don't think he fits tip like as crisply as Barnes does. It's still, I think in my mind, a big swing because of the potential. You know, maybe he doesn't reach that. He's still only 25 years old, which seems impossible because he's part of that Marcus Smart draft class. But, you know, I do like that. There are instances where I could say split it, and I'd be intrigued. So to stay on the Orlando thing, because I just think they're invariably one of the teams that is going to make moves. Like Terrence Ross scorches the Celtics all the time off the bench and gives you a little bit of size, gives you some shooting. Not someone who can necessarily go play the four, but he's definitely going to give you a little bit of more consistency than the Ojeles of the world. And no offense, like Semi's great defensively, but just you're not going to get that sort of consistency on a three-point shot. And then they have like Kem Birch. You could throw another big man in there if you had to move one out. He's a free agent though after this year, so I don't know if I love that. There's moves to be made that, you know, but so much of it is going to hinge on who's sellers. You know, if the Kings just all of a sudden say, we're going for it, all right, well, you know, what are you looking at out there? The Bulls, you know, are they going to move Markkanen, Wendell Carter? Like, who are they willing to move? No one can sort of get a read on that. But Danny's definitely going to find something out there. You know, we'll hear PJ Tucker thrown around. PJ, I don't love the idea of an older guy, especially one who is in the final year of his deal, because it's not helping you long term. And you can't build this roster out after this season unless you hit a home run here with someone who's under contract deeper into the future. So, yeah, I think unfortunately, like, you know, I didn't, when we one of our editors, Peter, said, you know, can you just, I know you've written it a couple times, can you make the case for Harrison Barnes again? And I was like, you know, all right. And I wrote it. And I was like, oh, man, I just found out I'm all in on Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
I'm at the point where I need the fan club T-shirt. So so Aaron Gordon, do anything for you?
Yeah, I'm like, we already have Javonte Green. Like, I just think of Aaron, and I'm joking, but just in terms of dunking. Like, I still think of Aaron Gordon as a dunker more than anything. I mean, it doesn't really move the needle for me. I got to be honest. I go back to Barnes and I just say he's a poor man's Hayward, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. He can pass, he can rebound, he can defend, he can make open threes. So that is becoming, but then you also say, you know, he's not that much of a difference maker. Like, we don't want to overstate it. I'd still rather have Gordon Hayward. But I think to me, he does fit that sweet spot of now and later. And when you lost Hayward, and just knowing how this league works, same thing with Kyrie, there's no obvious way to replace guys. There's no one-to-one way typically to replace guys. And this is giving you a tiny little opening to do that. That's why it has to be someone beyond this year.
It's funny to me now because a lot of people were at the point where they were just like, you know what, Gordon Hayward, wash your hands, just move on. But now we're sitting here and we're saying, well, what would be the perfect player to add to this team? Oh, Gordon Hayward.
Gordon Hayward would
be the perfect player
to
add. Wait, who can you add that brings all of what Gordon Hayward brought? I think it just sort of it crystallizes this conversation. Just like you said, now they've got to work to find that guy. They were willing to pay probably upwards of $30 million to bring him back. Now they've got to figure out a way to get that production at slightly less with this traded player exception. I do want to talk a little bit of football before we get out of here.
Sure.
I mean, it's the biggest story in New England, obviously. I want to tell you – Well, let's just start here before I get into my part of it. How did you feel watching Tom Brady win a Super Bowl last night?
I was rooting for Brady. How could you not? Like, everything that he did over 20 years here. And my thing was, yeah, it didn't end particularly well in New England in terms of, you know, he's skipping off-season workouts. He was getting a little uppity about, you know, not being surrounded by enough weapons, all that stuff. I get that. But at the end of the day, the 20 years that he gave us here more than earned him the right to be cheered for by us last night. And so I wasn't rooting against him, not for a second. And I wasn't surprised. I was surprised at the final score, but the fact that Brady won another Super Bowl and figured it out doesn't shock me at all.
At the start of the year, I was really excited because I was like, get to watch Bucks games and essentially be a fan of another team, right? Mm-hmm. Like, sort of the same way I feel about the Charlotte Hornets right now. I really like watching the Hornets because there's so many relatable pieces down there, watching Terry and Gordon. And, you know, it's nice to have that secondary team, especially in a year where Patriots stunk. So, but then there would be games where Brady would struggle. And I found myself having these, like, ooh, I kind of enjoy watching him struggle. Like, you know, okay, maybe because it justified the moving on. But it was so weird because by the end of the year, and maybe it was just because watching the Patriots quarterback situation play out, I completely swung to the opposite extreme. And I was all in on Brady and wanted him. And I was like flabbergasted by my friends that didn't want him to succeed because, again, they're so protective of this Patriot empire. Like it diminished what they've done. I don't know. I really enjoyed watching it last night. And it's a marvel when I think that he's a year older than Brad Stevens. I mean, it just fascinates me what he's doing. I hope he plays forever. It's truly, truly remarkable. And I also love it because every time Tom Brady does something, it makes me think back to when the Celtics sent Tom Brady and Kelly Olynyk to try to convince Kevin Durant to come to Boston. I think about how outrageous that is can we just go rewind? Because we think about this, like when the Celtics were making the pitch to Durant, you know, they weren't close to what they are now. There was like intriguing young talent. Isaiah was starting to break out. But remember, they hadn't signed Horford yet. They hadn't really signed any free agent. They go pitch Horford. They take the plane up to New York. They're in the Hamptons. And there's this photo. And it's Danny Pags, Brady, and Kelly Olynyk, Marcus Smart with a orange mohawk, and Isaiah Thomas. And I'm thinking, I would love to know what Kevin Durant came out of that meeting thinking. The only way Brady could have further cemented his legacy if he was enough in those meetings to have convinced Kevin Durant to come to Boston.
I think he would have been. And then Olynyk walked in the room and he's like, yeah, I'm out of here.
I'm really intrigued by your, like, because think about it. Like the pitches, you bring Brady in to break the ice. Like anybody's going to be awed by that. Brad Stevens comes in. And, you know, from all accounts, everyone, you know, we've heard from, whether it was Horford or just Gordon the first time around, like Brad's is bare bones. Like, here's how I'm going to use you. Here's how I'm going to make you an all-star, accentuate your talents. And that really resonates with guys. But yeah, then Kevin Durant at that point probably looked up and was like, just don't know about this supporting cast. You're not going to go to Golden State and have maybe the best team in NBA history. But, you know, now if you could bring Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart along, trying to think who the oddball who the Celtics could bring along that would be that Olynyk role. And this isn't meant as disrespect to Kelly Olynyk.
Oh no, it is.
I mean, it's just not the guy you want as part of your recruiting pitch, you know, in terms of putting you over the top of elite talent. I enjoyed Kelly's time here. He was a fun guy to hang out with. But I need everybody to go like, subscribe, revel in Tom Brady's Super Bowl win. Tell us if we're wrong down in the comments on the YouTube page if you'd like. We will catch you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.